from Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our Southwest studios in La Crosse. Thank you very much for joining us this week. The bulk of the show this week is going to be spent talking about domestic violence, child abuse, spousal abuse, partner abuse, and the ramifications thereof in light of COVID-19 and people's emotions being stretched to their ends. And we're going to be talking with several guests today, including the two that I have joining me off the top of the show. Dr. Leah Morkin is the clinical director for the Family and Children's Center. We'll ask her more about that center in a moment, the counties that they operate in. They're active in Wisconsin and Minnesota. Also joining us today is Lila Barlow. She's the assistant manager of the Family and Children's Section for La Crosse County, and so we'll ask her about the county's activities in that area and how people can avail themselves of services as needed. But first, let me welcome both of my guests today. Leah, Lila, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having us.
Absolutely. So let me start with because I said we would jump right into it. Lila, let's start with you. Talk a little bit about what you do with the county as the Assistant Manager for Family and Children's.
So we have a large unit for our Family and Children's Child Protective Services here at La Crosse, as we're one of the bigger counties in Wisconsin. And so we oversee any reports that are coming in for child abuse or neglect. We screen those. We go out to the homes. We offer services. If we need to have formal services brought in or court involvement, we also oversee any of those court-involved cases. And we try to work with the families for kids to remain in their home and wrap services around families for kids to stay home. But if the circumstances arise that we need to have placements happen, we also oversee the foster care department and our kinship department. So we take the full case from any aspect of a child welfare to a child abuse case, and we see it through.
That sounds good. And so just we're clarifying here at the beginning of our conversation, you're with La Crosse County, so an agent of the government. Leah, you're with Family and Children's Center, which is not a government agency. Tell us a little bit about what you do and where your services are offered.
The Family and Children's Center is a regional, private, not-for-profit agency, and we offer a continuum of services that are designed to strengthen families and also promote individual well-being. Different programs include child abuse and neglect prevention programs, community-based counseling, residential options, community support programs, and then several outreach programs. We have locations in La Crosse, and we also have a location in Winona, Sparta, and Viroqua.
All right, so let's talk about abuse in the pandemic. That's at least our jumping off point today. People have been under a lot of stress, a lot of wondering what's going to happen next. For a couple of months, people were under safer at home orders, or, you know, in Wisconsin or in Minnesota, similar equivalents there. How has that, Lila, how has that affected what you've been experiencing as you're trying to protect children in our area?
What we've seen is a higher stress level for families that have children in their home, and that is biological families as well as other caregivers, foster parents, grandparents, the neighbor down the street. We've seen an increase in the stress of those families. Some are needing help for rent. Some are needing help for food. Some are needing assistance because of the child's behaviors. And without the structure of school, without the structure of some of the agencies that had been offering help, such as in-home services or mentoring services or activities to take the child out in the home to give a parent a break, those are the stresses that have added to the family. And we've had a real increase of calls coming through our department with parents saying, I just can't do it. I can't meet the needs of my child because I can't have that. I don't have that structure. I can't meet these needs, and we need help. And we're doing a lot more work of trying to bring services in, thinking outside the box so that families are getting a break when they need it. Kids are getting a break when they need it, and that families are being able to to stay intact during this time. That's primarily has been our biggest aspect through the last 2 to 3 months.
Leah, what about the Family and Children's Center? What have you seen in light of the COVID-19 pandemic?
Well, we continue to offer services, and we have offered services throughout the entire pandemic. The pandemic has changed the way we can offer services. We do a lot more things through telehealth platforms and that sort of piece. The one thing that we've noticed is when the kids haven't been in school and they are, you know, more in their homes, it's similar to what Lila was saying, that there's a lot more stress in the home and there's a lot more, there's less routine. And so we're really seeing kiddos that are struggling with all the changes in routine and the changes in structure. And so we have services in place that are here to help the families kind of create a place of well-being and safety and offer that to the families that are kind of in crisis right now.
I want to see if we can have a little bit of a conversation about terminology here. There's even some debate about what kinds of punishment for children comes under the heading of abusive or whatever. When we talk about abuse of children, what are we talking about exactly? Let's start with you, Leah.
Well, generally, we're very accepting of the different ways that people parent their children. What we would end up doing is reporting to a place such as La Crosse County if we are suspecting either emotional abuse or physical abuse or sexual abuse. And then we kind of leave it up to the county to do the investigation and to move further forward with that. And so we don't do the determination of what is abusive and what is not, but we are certainly working with the county in order to make sure people stay safe.
Okay. So Lila, from the county's perspective, what crosses that line into something that you would call abusive behavior?
Sure, and that's a difficult question. Again, we have criteria from the state level that we are trained specifically in. So any call that comes in is screened with identifying marks, and we're looking at things such as, are there marks on the child? Is the child fearful? Is the potential abuser still in the home or have access to the child? All those things take into consideration on what we can and should do and at what time frame. Sometimes it is an immediate response. Sometimes it's a 2 to 3 day response. And so we have criteria that we work on around that. We really try to gather all the information that we can from the reporter. And as we need, we go out to the homes, sometimes with law enforcement, sometimes not. We try very hard to talk with the family and really look at the strengths of the family and try to bolster the strengths that that family has so that we can work on any concerns or issues or problems that are happening in the home to mitigate those. Sometimes that means a friend or a family member can come to the home, or the child needs to be at respite for a couple of days with grandma. We try to really brainstorm how that family is functioning and take the best pieces of that functioning and continue to grow that so that we can alleviate any safety concerns that go through or have worries for that home or the community from there.
So Lila, is it possible for people who have engaged in inappropriate, whether it's inappropriate discipline or really abusive behavior to change their ways, to turn that around and to keep their children in their home? Is re-education enough?
I think that is our primary goal at La Crosse County, is to help families think about when times were going well and what was going on in their lives at that time. Often in the economy that we have and what we've seen is there could be possible drug abuse that has changed or has turned the tide for that family. And can we work with a family to go on a recovery piece and get back to some of that great parenting they were doing once upon a time? So yes, we do have a number of families who are able to get help, get support that they need, the wraparound services, such as the resources that Family and Children's Center offers and the counseling that they're able to offer to help families get back on track. Because what we know is that children need the connections that their families provide. And if we can help them heal and get on the other side, they are much better off having that family heal and be able to stay in that home than to taking them out of the home and placing somewhere else. So our firm belief and philosophy is that families can and do often change with support and help from the community.
Our guest today on Newsmakers, Lila Barlow, who is with La Crosse County. She's part of the family and children section of La Crosse County Department of Child Protective Services. And also Dr. Leah Morkin, who's the clinical director at the nonprofit Family and Children's Center, which is active throughout our listening area, both in the Winona area in Minnesota and in the La Crosse area here in Wisconsin as well. We thank them both for joining us today, and we'll be back with more of our conversation. This is Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio. From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. Thank you very much for listening. I'm Ezra Wall in our La Crosse studios. If you'd like to learn more about the program, stream on demand, submit an idea for a future show, you can do that all on our website. It's wpr.org/newsmakers. We're joined this segment by Lila Barlow, who's the assistant manager for Family and Children's at La Crosse County. That's part of the Division of Child Protective Services there at the La Crosse County. We're with also Dr. Leah Morkin, who's the clinical director at the Family and Children's Center, which is a nonprofit group that helps family and children, obviously. Leah, Lila, thank you for joining us again.
Thank you.
So
we're talking about child abuse. We're talking about how people have been stressed out during this time and might have difficulty making some of the right decisions as they go through that. And one of the things that I wanted to make sure that we do is talk about some of those coping mechanisms or personal strategies that people can utilize to help themselves make positive choices regarding their family when they feel like they're at their wit's end. So, Leah, let's start with you. Talk about some of the strategies at the Family and Children's Center that you've used to help people maintain a positive family environment when things are really getting difficult.
One thing that we really work on and we coach parents to do is to make sure that they have house rules and different things that set boundaries and reflect the children being at home more. The idea is to make sure that children understand what is safe and what is not safe, and things like if certain parts of your house are off limits, such as the basement for little kiddos or whatever that may be, as well as different areas of privacy and safe places that they can go to. Another idea is to really focus on group activities and trying to keep everyone together and have positive experiences as much as possible. I understand there's a lot of stress right now, and so the more positivity and happiness that we can have in a group, the better we can be as a family. And so things like cooking together, cleaning together, drawing, coloring, watching movies, anything that the family would find fun and something they could do together. Another thing is to really important right now to keep lines of communication open with children. There's a lot of information out there, and they have questions and concerns. And if they're allowed to ask those questions and you can answer it or you can find the answers together, that's also a good strategy for communicating and keeping your own stress level and your child's stress level down just through communication. Other ideas is to make sure that you recognize any, for this is for parents, that you recognize any new behaviors that are emerging for your children that may be a signal of fear or questioning or that sort of thing, and really take the time to listen and to communicate with them. And really another idea is to somehow do something with your community that's a safe distance with social distancing and all those things in place, but somehow create a sense of community both within your home and within those around you, because that will really help with the mental health of everyone, both in your home and in your community.
Leah, let's talk a little bit about the heat of the moment when something really is going wrong. It's been, who knows what scenario leads up to this. For some people, they don't need much of a scenario at all, but one could imagine it's been a tough day. Maybe I haven't been working as regularly. The kids are just being an absolute bear, you know, which we all know kids can do sometimes, and I'm about to snap.
Mm-hmm.
What happens then? How do I not do that?
Sure. So this is different for each person and each parent. But things that I often recommend to people is just take a step back, take a deep breath. Generally, when you're in a high stress situation, if you can create some distance for yourself and just allow yourself a little time, it would help then interact with other people. And so perhaps it's setting up a rule or some boundaries around, when I get home from work, let me put my things away and give me just a few minutes to unwind, and then I will come back and I will be able to listen better. And so there's a lot of ideas with really relaxing yourself and figuring out how you can be less stressed as a parent, and then dealing with the stress of your children.
Lila, with the county, as you're investigating, you know, how to handle the certain situations involving the children that you're trying to protect, as people are evaluating their own family structure, how do the people that you're working with, or maybe what advice do you have for people who you're not yet working with, how do they know when there's something that they can work through, or when a portion of the family just needs to leave an abuser behind?
Right. I believe that each family dynamic is going to be a little different. And what I would say to anyone is call. We're here to help. We have multiple services and resources, and we can connect with wonderful community partners such as FCC to get help for anyone in the community. We have a New Horizons program here for domestically violent victims. We've been able to connect with multiple resources in the La Crosse area, and sometimes out of the La Crosse area when we've needed to. So I think that anytime there is doubt or a question, to call. And that's my best advice. We have services that can be in the home. We have services that are on a voluntary basis. We will connect with our economic support staff, if it's funding pieces that need help with their housing or food. So I believe my best response there is, if there's any question, call and ask someone. You're going to get directed to someone who's going to take the time and really respond to the needs that are in that home.
And if you don't, a number of our listeners don't happen to live in La Crosse County, but they would be able to contact their own county departments and find what services are available in their county.
Correct. Every county would have some type of emergency system that if they call and ask or request services or request some type of education on what resources are, they should be directed to those in each of their counties.
There's a certain stigma involved over the years that's been established about people getting the county involved in their family situation. People might think that if I reach out to the county and the county gets involved in me developing a more positive family environment, that's the first step in the county taking my kids away. But that's not necessarily the case, is it?
That is a stigma that we're trying very hard in La Crosse County and really across the whole state of Wisconsin to change. We want families to stay together. We want to support family members in keeping that family dynamic together, but in a safe way. So that is our number one priority. When we have the unique challenges of having to need separation, we try to do that in the best way possible, letting the family take the lead on who may be friends, family, people they can reach out to. And we try to do this more with a family-teamed approach and a strength-based, very much trauma-informed platform than has been in the past. And so that's definitely the direction that child welfare is headed. And it's scary. I won't say that it's not. Anytime that you get a call from Child Protective Services, it's a scary call. But we try hard to make that less scary. We have dedicated workers who think outside of the box, really go into the home, do intensive services, and bring in multiple supports and community partners to really make every home situation successful when we can.
So people in the community who might be observing the behavior of their neighbors, or even, you know, the quintessential story of, you know, somebody sees a person interacting with their child at the grocery store or something like that. What should people be looking for if they think that they have seen something that triggers ideas of child abuse or something like that? You know, it's, you'd hate to think that, well, if I only would have called law enforcement or called the county, something could have been done. On the other hand, you don't want to, you know, throw good parents under the bus just because they had a bad moment in the grocery store. So how do people in the public make those choices as to when to call law enforcement, when to get the county involved?
Yeah, that is a great question, and one that we're asked quite often. And I think it really comes down to comfort level. Some people are comfortable taking that step and saying, hey, it looks a little stressed, can I help here? And can diffuse a situation, and maybe it was just a moment in time. Some people are not comfortable stepping in or saying something in the moment, and they're much more comfortable calling Child Protective Services and saying, hey, I saw this. This is, you know, I knew these people, or I'm really worried about my neighbor, or I'm just really concerned about the kid that's in the park and his family lives so-and-so. That's what we're here for. And we can make those knocks on the door, those calls. We do offer a lot of voluntary services. And it's better to make the call if you're in doubt and let us go out and see if the family needs or would like some services, especially now with the safer at home order that had been put in place. We don't have kids in schools and going maybe to the activities that they were before. And so there's not as many people seeing a child on a day-to-day basis. So it's really important that our community, our neighbors, our friends, are taking those steps, asking kids questions, and making those reports if they have any doubt whatsoever.
Well, as we close our conversation today, I want to make sure that everybody in our audience knows how they can reach each of your organizations. So, Lila, first of all, how can people reach out to La Crosse County, either the Family and Children section or in general, the Child Welfare Division?
So it's a really easy number. Our main number is 784. HELP, H-E-L-P, which is 4357.
All right. And Leah, how can people contact the Family and Children's Center or find more information about your organization?
Absolutely. And so I just also wanted to add that if you are a family that is feeling stressed right now and you just need some extra support, please feel free to call us, and we will provide help in whatever way we can. Our number in La Crosse is 608-785-0001. Our number in Winona is 507-453-9563. And you can also visit us at fcconline.org.
All right. Dr. Leah Markin with the Family and Children's Center. She's the clinical director there. And Lila Barlow, the assistant manager of Family and Children's for La Crosse County. Thank you both very much for joining us today on Newsmakers.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. If you'd like to hear this conversation again, if you'd like to submit a question or an idea for another program, you can find our website at wpr.org/newsmakers. Of course, you can subscribe to a podcast if you'd like to get notified when our show posts new episodes. You can do that by opening your favorite podcast platform, search for Newsmakers, and hit subscribe. We would very much appreciate it. The show continues after this. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall in our La Crosse studios, and we've been talking today about domestic abuse, particularly child abuse and partner abuse, and how it's exacerbated by the stress involved in some of these times that we're living through right now, the pandemic and other factors playing a role in that as well. We're joined now by Ann Kapoff. She's the Executive Director of New Horizons Shelter and Outreach Centers. Ann, thank you very much for joining me today on Newsmakers.
Thank you, Ezra, for the invitation.
Absolutely. So we're talking about domestic violence or partner abuse, really, and child abuse and what that kind of looks like in our community during these times. What has your shelter and your outreach center experienced during the COVID pandemic, maybe during the safer at home orders, but even otherwise, even after those orders have been lifted?
Mm-hmm. So what we have been seeing and what we're still currently seeing is that persons are reaching out to us with needs for finances, groceries, financial assistance, because they're trying to cover their basic needs. So unfortunately, they're putting the abuse to the side or trying to work around it or ignore it because of the basic needs, the rent money, the groceries, you know, those types of things that are popping up and need to be taken care of every single day.
So are you talking about people who are calling you saying, I would leave, but I can't because I can't afford the rent? If you'd help me, then I might be able to leave. Or are you talking about people who are just resigned to their current existence at the moment?
Unfortunately, it's persons who are just resigned to their current existence, you know, just the needing to, not even persons saying, if you help me, I'll be able to leave. It's not even that. They're so many times victims of abuse downplay their situation, so they don't think it's as bad as what it really is because they're trying to just live through every single day, and that is continuing through this COVID-19 also. So persons are just pushing their abuse that they're experiencing under the rug and focusing on paying the rent and feeding their families.
So what's it like, even in sort of, I guess, normal times is what we might refer to it as, what's it like helping somebody turn that corner so that they're I don't know if it's a confidence issue. I don't know if that's the right terminology. I'm trying not to assume things about other people's circumstances, but what's it like helping somebody reach the point where, you know, yesterday they weren't willing to consider leaving. They were worried about their security within the home, and today they might be more willing to have that conversation.
And that's a very good question, because we know that reasons why victims of abuse stay with the perpetrator many times is because of lack of financial ability to go out on their own and to start a new home and to make sure that their children are fed and a roof over their head. And so they stay for financial purposes. It really, really, truly is up to the victim/survivor as to when they are ready to leave the abusive situation. We as advocates, or you as a bystander out in the community, might see that the situation that they're in is extremely dangerous, perhaps even lethal sometimes, and we can encourage them and provide them with information about services such as New Horizons or shelters or support groups, and they still might say, I'm not ready to leave. So basically, if persons are have reached out to us, you know, for information, that type of thing, we'll provide them with that self-esteem building, empowerment skills, try to help them with financial resources and so forth, safety planning to keep them safe when they're in the home or if they decide to leave, you know, the offer of shelter. We offer those things every time they reach out to us. We do continue to do the safety planning. When they choose to make the change, then we're there for them. We will see persons, just kind of a personal thing. I've been with New Horizons for 16 years, and when I first started, we had a mom who, with a couple of kids, would come into shelter every now and then, but had chosen to stay, you know, with her perpetrator, again, for financial reasons, and they had children together. And probably about 5 years ago, I talked with her. She came into our outreach center, and she had finally left him. So she was, you know, with him for 12 years that I knew of, with the abuse happening, was receiving the services from us with safety planning and, you know, self-esteem building, that type of thing, and then finally made the decision that she was prepared and ready to start out on her own with her children, and things have been going really well since then.
That's wonderful. It must be a really difficult thing, like, because you know for actual fact and based on your experience how to make this person's life better, but you can't just force someone to do it or you know, in a certain way in their mind. I mean, you may not be treating them any differently than the person who's abusing them in a certain way. You're taking away that control over their own life. So you kind of got to just ride with them until they're ready to make the call.
Absolutely. That is absolutely correct.
What about people with kids versus people without kids? Do you find that people with children, with other members in the household to think of, are less willing to consider leaving an abuser?
It's different with every person, right?
Okay.
I know that having children makes it extremely difficult for persons to leave their abusive situation. I'm a survivor of abuse. My first husband was physically and emotionally abusive. And the hardest thing for me when I did break loose, and I mean, this is over 30 years ago, so it's been a long time, but the hardest thing for me to break loose from was because I felt like I was pulling my children from their dad. He was not abusive to them, but he was abusive to me. Yet I know now that it's not healthy for children to even see or hear that abuse happening within the family. That just kind of adds to the cycle of abuse, you know, we want children to know what healthy relationships are.
Even if the children aren't the victims of the physical abuse, that takes an emotional toll on them, I would guess.
Absolutely. I think we see, as a survivor of abuse who has children, I think we think that our children don't see that because maybe we save the arguments till after the children go to bed, or our partner has never been physically abusive to us in front of the children, but they do know. They sense it. They feel it. They hear it.
What are some of the warning signs that people need to look out for? I mean, obviously, in the early stages of a relationship, that person might not be abusive, or at least not physically. What are some of the warning signs that people need to look out for that they could have a problem down the road, or that there's something in their relationship that they need to address before it's too late to address it?
I think one of the main things, we call them red flags, and there are many of them, but there is the a partner who is pushing for the relationship to move too fast, whether that mean moving in with you, proposing right away, that's all kind of too fast. That's typically a warning sign. If they're isolating you from your family or friends, and we might not see it as isolation, but the perpetrators will attempt to have the survivor or the victim, we kind of use that both ways in those words, they'll have the victim begin to believe that they, the perpetrator, are the only one that they can count on. They're the one that's always there. They will down-talk the victim's parents and family and friends and that type of thing to make it, you know, so it's the isolation, and then the victim thinks that the perpetrator is the only one there for them. Also, jealousy is a huge sign, too. So, like, if your partner is not wanting you to spend time with your friends who you had previously, or your family, or talk to another person of the opposite sex, you know, that's typically a sign, that huge jealousy. Oftentimes, I think especially younger persons think that jealousy is a sign of love. It's not. Good, healthy relationships allow people to have friends of every gender.
So if someone is facing circumstances like this, or if someone is in a situation where they feel like they need help, what resources are available from New Horizons that they might access?
Okay, what I would suggest first is that somebody calls our crisis line. And we have crisis lines in Trumbull County because we provide services up there, and here in La Crosse County. If you contact that crisis line, you don't even have to give your name. You can be anonymous, kind of let them know, you know, what you're experiencing, that type of thing. They can do safety planning with you over the telephone. They can connect you to a resource advocate or youth and family advocate that can help you build your self-esteem back up, help you find resources out in the community. If you need a restraining order, we can help you do that. If you're eligible for shelter, meaning that there is a safety issue, we can, you know, help you get situated with shelter and so forth. So either that, or they can check our, if someone is just wondering what services we have available, I would invite them to check out our website.
Okay, and what's that website?
www.nhagainstabuse.org.
nhagainstabuse.org.
Correct.
And yes. As far as the crisis line, is that something that you could just search, for instance, for Trumbull County Crisis Line or La Crosse County Crisis Line and access it pretty easily?
A person could actually, I think that's right on our websites too.
Okay.
So if it was easier for a person to go to website, you know, versus finding the telephone number, I can sure share the crisis line numbers with you.
Yeah, that'd be fine.
Okay. So I'll give the toll-free one. So
okay.
That place, you know, where anybody's calling from. So our La Crosse crisis line toll-free is 1-888-231-0066. And our toll-free crisis line for Trumbull County is 1-800-706-8586. And there's someone that will answer 24/7, trained advocates who knows all about domestic abuse, sexual assault, and human trafficking.
Very valuable information indeed, and I appreciate you sharing it with us. Ann Kapoff is the Executive Director of New Horizons Shelter and Outreach Centers. Ann, thank you very much for sharing with us today.
Thank you, Ezra.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. I appreciate you joining us today. If you'd like to find out more information about our program, you can do that at WPR.org/newsmakers. We'll have more right after this. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks so much for tuning in today. I'm Ezra Wall. We've been having a very valuable conversation this morning about child abuse and domestic violence, and how people can be aware of that, and how we can stand in the gap on behalf of our neighbors, and the various resources that are available. We're turning attention now to another organization that is a valuable asset in the community, and that is the YMCA. A lot of people know about the Y as either the gym they go through or the subject of the song. But of course, it's so much more than that to the community, and has been part of the Cooley region for years and years. And joining me is their executive director and CEO of the La Crosse Area Family YMCA, Bill Soper. Bill, thank you very much for your time today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Sure thing. So when we're talking about the different resources available at the Y, like everybody else, you guys had to close down most of the services that you offer and refocus what you were doing during Safer at Home as a result of COVID-19. Talk about what some of the services were and how you were involved in the community during COVID-19 and Safer at Home.
Sure. Yeah, great question. So, you know, we closed our facilities the evening of March 17th and made a very quick decision to repurpose both of our facilities to provide emergency child care in the community. And so the Doll Y downtown became emergency school age care, and the Hauser Y in Onalaska became, as it normally runs, emergency care for infants through preschool age kids. And so that was an immediate need that got identified. In fact, we were having conversations with the school district, with Gunderson Health System, with Mayo, and with others about the need for emergency child care. So we quickly jumped in and started offering those programs. After several days, we got invited into the conversation around feeding kids and families in the community. So we set up at Pogue Park, at our teen center, and at the Northside Library. And we started providing suppers to children in the community and doing that 7 days a week. And then we have, last October, we hired a Chris, who is our community health worker, and he works with people in the community, really the most vulnerable people in the community, around their health and getting them to appointments and so on. And Chris continued his work, and in fact, his caseload grew during the, as you would expect, his caseload grew during the pandemic. And then Sarah Johnson, our mental health director, continued her good work in the community around, you know, mental health and trying to connect with some of our members who are more isolated and so on. So we quickly pivoted, started doing new things, and felt really good about our response to the shutdown.
The services that you were offering in terms of childcare, how many people were able to utilize those services over the couple of months?
You know, it the number of school-age kids who were served at the Doll Y was about 40 kids a week, and we're in the same neighborhood for the number of kids at the Hauser Y, which normally we serve 1,000 kids a day when things are normal. And when I say normal, when school's operational and so on, we serve about 1,000 kids a day in school age care. So it's a fraction of the number of kids we normally serve. But for those parents who needed care, essential workers, we heard from parents who said, hey, if I don't have childcare, I'm going to lose my housing because I won't have a job. So in those situations, we felt really good about the kids we were serving and making sure their parents were able to work.
I don't have kids, but my impression from families that I know who use the Y is that normally the kids might come for an after-school program or maybe a weekend program or for a couple hours at some point to, you know, use the pool or take swimming lessons or something like that. In a childcare situation, you're talking about these kids, though, coming and spending most of the day in a childcare situation. So even though the number's lower, I got to think the amount of time that they're spending with you is a bit more, and you're having a bit more of an influence on them in that.
Yeah, we certainly think so. You know, it was 6:30 a.m. to 6 p.m. Some of the kids, you know, those were our available hours, and so we provided care for those kids all day. And again, although the numbers were lower than the number we normally serve, the one of the challenges we had is that with UWL out, we don't have our normal pool of college kids who work for us. So many of our program directors who were laid off from their normal things filled in and worked as childcare staff for the last, you know, 10 or 12 weeks now. And the challenge behind that is, of course, they're paid more than the part-time college kids, so it took more resources. And fortunately, the La Crosse Community Foundation, the Great Rivers United Way, had their emergency fund, and they provided two grants to us to help fund emergency child care, so that really helped a lot. So, yeah, we're really proud of the work our team did relative to child care.
I know you, the YMCA, I don't know if this is part of a national effort or this was strictly a local effort, but I know some services that people might depend on the Y for were instead transitioned to online. I'm thinking of, you know, some not necessarily individual advice, but like some personal mental health tips were offered online. I know some workout resources were available online. Talk about what you were available to offer in creative ways that you might not have before or to a greater extent than you have before.
Sure. So the shutdown caused us to very quickly realize that we've got to be offering some things online for our members. And so one of those was fitness classes where members could access classes from home. And that was something that a lot of Y's, obviously across the country, I don't think there's any Y's that didn't close nationally. They utilized the resources that were out there to make sure that members at least had an opportunity to stay active during the shutdown through the Y. And then, as I mentioned, Sarah Johnson, our mental health director, provided lots of online resources, you know, mindful minutes. And because, you know, the shutdown, the pandemic, you know, unemployment issues, very, very stressful. And, you know, Sarah tried to bring some calmness and, you know, mental health tips for people. And we're one of few Y's across the country that has a mental health director. It's really a I'd say an emerging role at YMCA's. Now that she's worked for us for several years, it seems obvious to us. but we're one of few. And so Sarah even reached out to WISE across Wisconsin to help the staff at those WISE kind of get through this. So we're really, really pleased with the work she did as well.
Now, you're starting to reopen again. As of June 1st, I think you're phasing in all of your other different services. Talk about how that looks different now after Safer at Home and still in the midst of the international pandemic.
Sure. So we are in what we're considering phase one of reopening. And the biggest difference that members would find when they come in is that they've got to make a reservation, and it's all available online. It's super easy. But they've got to make a reservation to swim in the pool, use a wellness center, take a fitness class, anything that they want to do at the Y, they've got to make a reservation for. And we have not been a reservation-based facility, right? We have enough room. People can come in and get their activities. But phase one, we're asking people to make reservations. So that would be a big change. The other change that as staff we're getting used to, and we hope we don't have to get used to it for very long, is that the social spaces that normally exist in the Y's are really limited right now. Normally, if you come into our Y's, you know, any time of day, there's large numbers of people who either before or after they exercise would be spending time together, you know, building relationships. So social connections are so important. Drinking coffee, reading the newspaper, just hanging out, spending time with others. That's not happening right now. And we're encouraging people, you know, not to spend too much time, you know, closely. We want people to social distance, want people to get in and get their exercise and then you know, get on about their business. But that's the other big change right now, is just what our facilities look like and feel like inside relative to the time people spend, you know, being social.
So after phase one, how long do you anticipate until some of those restrictions might be loosened up a little bit?
Well, we're hoping phase one will be the month of June or shorter. We're starting to have those conversations now about when do we start to bring some of the other activities back. We think that our youth programs, so the traditional things that the Y is known for, like swimming lessons, gymnastics classes, dance, karate, youth sports, all those things, will probably come back, say, mid-July. We're thinking that some of the other activities, fitness classes that aren't virtual, maybe two people in a lap lane, racquetball, pickleball, those things might begin prior to the end of June. So we're really focused on member and staff safety. So we want to be patient and we want to take it slowly, but we want to provide enough activities to get people reengaged as members are ready.
That sounds like a plan. I know my mom will kill me if I don't ask. She just wants to know when the coffee's going to come back.
Yeah, we don't know yet. Isn't that the two things that, those would be the other two things that, that people notice when they come in? There's no coffee. And I said to one of the staff yesterday, boy, I missed the lobby coffee. You know, I'm used to grabbing a couple cups during the day. And then we don't have towel service currently because of the number of people that launder the towels, fold the towels, and all that. We don't have towel service right now. So that's the other thing that members are probably having to adjust to. But we don't know. There's a lot of people who miss the coffee and the towels. We just don't quite know yet when they're going to come back.
So if somebody wants to find more information about the schedule on which you're opening or what services are or are not available, where can they find you?
Yeah, they can either give us a call, 782-9622, or on our website, which is laxymca.org. All the information is there. Super easy to make a reservation. But if members need any help making a reservation, they can just give us a call.
That sounds good. Bill Soper is the Executive Director and CEO of the La Crosse Area Family YMCA. Bill, thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Well, here's another case of two steps forward and one step back. In the time since our conversation with Bill Soper of the YMCA, staff at the Y have tested positive for COVID-19, and as a result, the remotely located, the off-site childcare programs are being put on hold for a couple of weeks. The branches remain open because staff there were unaffected by the virus, And so our conversation still stands, but those child care programs that happen off-site have been put on hold for a couple of weeks. Remember, you can find this program online. You can stream all of our shows on demand. You can submit a question or a topic suggestion for a future show at our website. That's WPR.org/newsmakers. If you'd like to subscribe to our show as a podcast, go to your favorite podcasting platform, search for Newsmakers, and hit the subscribe button. Thanks also today to my producer, John Davis. For John, please join us next week for another Newsmakers here on Wisconsin Public Radio.